This is Robert Venditti, and you're listening to the Green Lantern Corecast.
Hi, this is Frankie from the Green Lantern Corecast. We're calling you for our interview.
Yeah, hey, how's it going, man?
Doing fantastic. You know, it could be a tons better, but, you know, it's a beautiful day.
We want to talk to you about an exciting new offer in cable TV.
What's your name?
All right, so let me start off. I'm, of course,
I'm
Frankie.
I'm going to tell you, how old, you said your name is Frankie?
Yes, Frankie.
Yeah, how old are you, Frankie?
28.
All right. Do you know the song The Humpty Dance?
Yes, I do. Yes,
you
yes, I do.
You sound just like that, dude.
I've heard that before. So I think that's an extreme compliment. All right, so let me introduce our panel of our judges, or our panelists here. We have Andrew. Andrew, say hey.
That's me. I run the www.thegreenlanterncorps.com and the message board and all that stuff.
We also have Brandon here.
I am the guy completely destroying your inbox every week.
Nice to meet you.
We also have Colton.
I'm the guy who doesn't do anything.
Pretty much.
All right.
And we also have Eric.
Colton.
We also have Eric here.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good to meet all you guys.
All right, so we're gonna ease up, you know, ease you into this, and, you know, pretty much introduce you into the episode, and pretty much, like, you know, just have a few questions for you to ask and answer, and that's pretty much it. Yeah. All right. So the only question I'm gonna ask you, Robert, is now that you're pretty much like the head writer for Green Lantern itself and the co-plotter for Green Lantern Corps, is there any chance that I personally will see Evil Star?
Any chance you will see Evil Star?
Yes.
Not in the immediate near term, I guess I would say. I came in with a definite plan of what I wanted to do with the book in terms of what my pitch was and what I felt the sort of, I guess the natural course of what would be the next step after what's going to happen at the end of Jeff's run when the Wrath of the First Lantern ties up. I sort of saw what the next thing would be and then kind of what the arc would be after that and what the arc would be after that. So I kind of have in my head roughly around 12 issues right now, and I say 12, but in monthly comics, you know, that could be 10 or it could be 16. Things are always sort of very fluid. But, you know, I kind of have in mind what I think that first year on the book is going to be like, and it's going to be a lot of new stuff, I would say. A lot of new lanterns, new villains, new challenges. Things like that.
Sounds fantastic. I love that you have pretty much an entire thing planned out and you know where you're going to go with this. Now, I'm going to hand it over to Andrew. Andrew, give him your questions.
Hey there, Robert. All right, so just diving in here. Now, coming off of Jeff's long, long run, it's been a roller coaster ride of big events and cliffhangers and, you know, double splash pages and twists and twists. And I think, to be honest, a lot of us have been overdosed with a big kind of sense of event fatigue. So how do you feel about the road behind you, meaning the last 2-3 years, the immediate past, and how will you be approaching the road ahead differently? And, for example, like how much of what you're going to be doing will be tying up Jeff's loose ends and how much of it's going to be a new beginning?
I would say it's definitely going to be a new beginning. I'm not I would say tying up any of his loose ends. I don't even know that he's going to have that many loose ends out there, you know. Like I say, I came to the book. I don't know if you guys know much about my background, but I didn't grow up reading comics. I read my first comic book in the year 2000. I was 27 years old. And so I'm not a writer of comic books who's real steeped in continuity of any character. And I like to think that whereas there was a time when I thought that would be a detriment to me, I like to think that it's an asset now because it allows me to come in and have a fresh take on things and just approach them as just stories in and of themselves and not really look at them in terms of long continuities and those kinds of things. So it was that way for X-Men of War. I mean, when they called me about X-Men of War, I literally had never heard of the character before. I'd never even heard of Valiant Comics, you know. With Green Lantern, obviously, I'd heard of it, and I had a familiarity with the character for general pop culture knowledge, but I didn't know a lot about the continuity and those kinds of things. And so really my approach was to just go and research it and find out what the broad strokes were and see what ideas came to me from doing that. It was after I sort of crafted my pitch and knew what I wanted my story arcs to be that I then went back and read, I don't know, probably over 200 issues of Green Lantern at this point, to get a sense of, you know, the voices of the particular characters and all those kinds of things. But, so I don't know that I'm really tying up any his loose ends. More so it's just dealing with something that when I was reading about what the Green Lanterns were and the emotional spectrum and all those kinds of things, it was just something that just leapt out at me that I thought would be a very interesting story to tell, and so we'll be doing that. Now, in terms of crossovers or events or those kinds of things, I guess an event would be termed as something that brings in all the books in the DCU. Is that kind of what you're saying, like a Blackest Night kind of thing?
It could be like a Blackest Night kind of thing, or it could be something even smaller, like War of the GLs or any of these other events that span, you know.
I still want to dig into Evil Star. Pretty much. That's still like a loose end that I'm looking into.
But basically, any kind of event that would sort of, you know, encompass all the books and kind of make all the writers, you know, freeze and go, okay, now we got to go and do this big event, and things get kind of paused on the development of the individual series, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, in terms of like huge, you know, I guess you would say, company-wide events or anything like that. No, I mean, I mean, coming into a book like this, I wouldn't even presume to think that I was going to be involved in something like that, you know. But when you're the lead writer of Green Lantern, you know, the way the job was explained to me was that you wanted to have a cohesion between the books, and you know, especially with something like Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, you know, sometimes things that happen in one happen in the other, and those kinds of things. So there will be moments like that, but.
Okay.
I myself am not looking to be the kind of writer who's telling other writers how to write their books, you know.
Okay.
I'm very much about letting them each have their own distinct voices, and I think they all have unique takes on their books and what they're going to do with them. But there will be those things that carry over, and I think part of that is just going to be sort of, again, just a logical extension of where things are going to be. And if you have a character like Hal who is, you know, going to be leading the Corps, and so that's, I think those are things that are going to somewhat, you know, run through Green Lantern Corps as well as the main Green Lantern title. But as far as me being co-plotter on Green Lantern Corps and things like that, you know, really Van is doing all the heavy lifting there. I'm just trying to help with the transition and get him acclimated to, you know, the plans that we have going forward and things like that. But really the ideas and the concepts and all those things are coming from him.
Okay, that kind of brings me to my next question. Now, because it seemed like in the past, Jeff, as the writer of GL, which is kind of like the flagship of all the other titles, he was kind of the de facto showrunner of all the other GL books, even Red Lanterns. And his hands were kind of every which way. Now, as the new writer of GL, does that fall to you? Or are we kind of looking at a scenario where this role sort of falls back to the editor? Or, like, who is the closest to a GL showrunner right now?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think the editor is definitely the one calling the shots. You know, Matt Idelson is a really good editor, and Chris Conroy, who's the associate editor, who I worked with on Demon Knights for four issues before he moved over to Green Lantern, they're both super sharp guys. And I would say that the direction is coming from them in terms of coordinating the books and those kinds of things. We're not getting, you know, direction from them in terms of here's what you need to do in this book and here's what you need to do in that book. I mean, we're not having that kind of thing, and I'm not telling anybody that either. You know, we've had meetings with all the Green Lantern writers. We've got together and we've talked, and you know, I would say it's a two-way street. You know, I have ideas, and other people have ideas as well, and we sort of find a way to make them all work. But I tried to be very upfront from the beginning in saying that this is the Green Lantern team, and while I'm the guy writing Green Lantern, I don't ever want to be the guy who's telling other people what they have to do in their books. And I guess, you know, to give you an example of that from just my personal life, and I apologize if this is a longer answer than you wanted, but
no,
when The Surrogates got adapted to film, a lot of people asked me, you know, how much involvement did you have in the film? And the answer is none, because I didn't want any, because I didn't want to be a guy whose screenwriters and directors and producers felt like was managing their creativity. And they're creative in their own right, and so let them do what they want to do, and I've already told the story what I want to, so let them do what they want to do, and I'm not going to be some guy sitting on their shoulder, you know, drawing them a roadmap. So that's kind of the approach I'm taking to this sort of Green Lantern group aspect as well.
I would say that's a welcome approach. Now, as the CCO, is Jeff pretty hands-off at this point, or is he chiming in at all?
I mean, Jeff is an awesome guy, you know. I've talked to him. He's just super cool, super down to earth. You never know by talking to him that he's, you know, one of the most significant writers of his generation. You know, he's just a regular guy, and so he's a great resource. And right now, you know, I think he's still focused on wrapping up what he wants to do. But he definitely knows what we want to do, and you know, all those discussions have taken place and those kinds of things. So, but yeah, I mean, I intend to use him as a great resource, because nobody knows his characters like he does. And also, going back and reading his entire run, you know, I was really struck by just sort of the wonder and the imagination and the epic scale of everything that he did. And I don't know, it's really a pretty extraordinary thing. I haven't really read anything like that before. And a lot of it, I think, is what in their best moments comic books can be, you know, and he was able to balance action and humor and character and plot and all these kinds of things. And so I definitely look forward to, you know, bouncing ideas off of him and talking things with him, you know, through his job as CCO.
All right. Now, one of the good things that I've seen in the GL family of books lately, post-reboot, and this might be, in fact, to Jeff's credit, is that they pretty much survived the New 52 reboot with their history intact. I mean, meaning with a few changes here and there, more or less the last, you know, 30, 40 years, more or less intact, at least the biggest, you know, bullet points here and there. Emerald Twilight, apparently it happened in some form. It's not really clear, but yeah, I mean, there's some changed history with, say, GL characters and characters outside the GL sphere, like, you know, Hal and Ollie, that's gotta be different now, but within it, like just within the core of the Lanterns, like John Stewart, Kyle, it seems pretty well all there. Now, is this something you're going to run with as well, or is your stance more let's have a fresh beginning and let's take advantage of the reboot, or is it more, you know, leave the history intact, I guess?
No, yeah, I'm not looking to come and throw dynamite into anything. I mean, I'm definitely keeping the history intact. I mean, I would say it's a beginning in a sense that it's a fresh jumping on point, you know,
sure,
for new
sure.
readers and kinds of things, but not in the sense that I'm, you know, doing away with anything.
All right. That's about all out of me.
All right. We're going to go to Brandon. Brandon, give him your sweet questions.
Sweet, sweet questions. You've said plenty of times and plenty of interviews before that Hal Jordan is going to be the guy in this book, and that you're creating many new characters and some new Lanterns as well. My question is, being as Hal Jordan has shared the spotlight for so long with Sinestro, with Simon, and before that it was John Stewart, how big do you plan on letting this cast grow in the Green Lantern book?
That's a good question. I would say, you know, when I talk about new Lanterns and things like that, I'm talking about in terms of supporting cast, not in somebody that will be necessarily sharing as a co-lead with Hal or anything like that. These are definitely going to be conflicts and challenges that are, you know, unique to Hal and very focused on Hal. And the new cast of characters that are around him, be they heroes or villains, are going to be sort of agents of those conflicts, if that makes sense, as opposed to somebody that's in there helping Hal deal with the conflicts in the way that a co-lead might, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You plan on giving us any names for any of these new characters, just to wet our mouths?
Let's see. Gosh, I don't know. That's one that could get me in trouble. Let me think about it for a minute. Boy.
Give us somebody who dies.
That would be even worse. As soon as you see him, you would know that he was going to die. No, I don't think I should name anybody right now. They probably don't want me to do that yet.
All right, fair enough.
I will say that if in the preview image,
the initial Billy Tan image?
Yeah, the initial Billy Tan image that came out. Two of the new characters are on that image.
Okay, so I'm a really big Carol Ferris fan. More than Hal, more than Guy, Kyle, all of them. Carol is... That's
more than reasonable, even.
Carol is my heart, and you know, as much as I love her, she makes some pretty terrible decisions involving Hal Jordan. How do you view their relationship, and how do you view Carol in general?
I think Carol's a great character as well, and there are big plans for her in the Green Lantern line. And I think that when you read issue one, you will see a scene between her and Hal. That if I'm reading your question correctly, I think you're going to like. It's going to be a scene that reading her as a character and understanding her as a character, I felt like this is exactly what she would do in this scenario.
Oh, you're tugging at my heartstrings right now. that's very much appreciated. I'm glad she's on your mind. Is she a central character to your book, or is she more of a Justin Jordan type character?
I would say she is a central character to the line, but yeah, so it's more than one book.
Okay, great, even better. How much of Charles and Van's writing will you be picking up on, or will they be picking up on from Joshua's plans?
Yeah, I mean, they're doing their own things, you know. There's certain plans that were already intact sort of line-wide of where the direction of things were going to go. And so in that sense, and those were sort of markers that were laid down. You know, when you come in on a work-for-hire gig, you don't just come in and do whatever you want. Like editorial kind of says to you, there's a general sense of what we want things to be, you know, go. You know, and that's kind of the fun of working in a work-for-hire job. I think when you do something creator-owned, which I've done in the past, you can do whatever you want, and of course it's very freeing, but it's a different kind of creativity to be able to do everything you want versus having to work with inside a set of constraints, you know? So to come onto a book like Green Lantern where you have continuity and things like that, and you're not just making everything up as you go, it forces you to be creative in a different way. And so, you know, there's certain elements that I think are going to carry over, but in a larger sense, they're entirely different takes, you know, for both of those books.
Okay. Hopefully, it's just as exciting. Hopefully this isn't a touchy subject, but I know you stated before in interviews that you, Justin Jordan, and Joshua Filecoff were good friends before the announcement that you were taking over the Lantern books. So I'm wondering, how is your relationship with Charles Soule and Van Jensen?
Yeah, I believe what I said, just to get that correct. I didn't really know Joshua before we started working together. We became friends afterwards, and we still are, you know. But I probably said that I've always been a fan of his writing, you know.
Okay.
But he's a West Coast guy, and I'm an East Coast guy, so I'd never really met him until we started working on Green Lantern. But he was a great guy, you know, got along great. Van is actually somebody I've been good friends with for, gosh, I don't know, probably about 8 years now. You know, he lives in Atlanta where I live, and we see each other all the time, so he and I are real tight. And Charles is somebody I've gotten to know more recently. And he's a super sharp guy. You know, we got to meet at the DC Summit. We did a good amount of talking there. You know, some really long conversations just about story in general. This is obviously before he was involved with the Green Lantern books at all. Just a really sharp guy, and I can see myself having a great relationship with him. And Justin, I already know pretty well from, you know, we both wrote books for Valiant. So.
Is that Is that relationship with Josh, it's not on any bad terms? You're still good?
No, yeah, we're fine. Yeah, everything that happened there, you know, and I don't even know that I know exactly what did happen because, you know, I only speak about things of which I was actually in the room when they happened, right. You know what I'm trying to say? So, but, you know, it's had no effect from my perspective on our relationship at all. I mean, obviously I haven't seen him since then because, again, he's a West Coast guy and I'm an East Coast guy, but, I mean, I have no hard feelings about anything. You know, every writer has to make the choice that they think of us for their career, and that's totally fine, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned that you and Van were good friends. Did you lobby for him to get the Green Lantern Corps gig?
I didn't lobby for him to get this particular job, but, you know, I've been working with DC for a while, and I've known editors and writers over there even longer. And whenever somebody asks me for recommendations on people that I think would be good that, you know, sort of quote-unquote haven't been discovered yet, Van is always a name that I put in, you know, with everybody. So he was a name that I talked to DC about, you know, months and months and months ago. And so when the Green Lantern Corps book opened up, they asked me if I thought he would be interested. And he has a pretty unique skill set that I think applies specifically to Green Lantern Corps because he's a pretty young guy. I think he's only about 30 years old, but, you know, he's already done a lot of things in his life. You know, he's been editor of his own magazine for several years. Not his own magazine, but he's editor of the Georgia Tech Alumni Magazine for several years, which is a magazine that has a lot of cutting-edge technology articles and things like that. He also was a lead crime reporter for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, you know, basically covering the police beat and, you know, listening to police scanners and going out in the middle of the night to cover, you know, report on crime and things like that. So these are all things that I thought would make him, you know, pretty good in terms of skill set for Green Lantern Corps. And I think those are the kind of things that got him the job. And like I say, me coming on as co-plotter is just really to help him with the transition, you know, the circumstances being what they are, get him caught up to speed on everything. And like I say, we see each other so much, it just seemed like a natural thing to do.
Okay. Steering more into controversial topics, you recently came out and stated quite clearly that there were no plans on killing Jon Stewart. why do you think there was so much backlash just to the idea of killing Jon when superheroes die every year and Green Lantern is no safe place either, as three out of four Earthlanders have already died?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say, you know, I mean, I said that there were no plans for Van and I, you know, I don't want to speak to what happened before that, but what I can say is it's something that, he was already not going to die before anybody on the internet even knew that he was ever possibly going to die, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So like all the outrage and all the reaction by that time, the situation had already been resolved.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of consternation, which is great. I mean, fans react to characters, and I think that's awesome. But in this case, you know, I think a lot of people probably got upset and worried that he was going to get killed off, and it had already been decided that he wasn't by the time they knew about it. So, but I mean, I understand that fans love characters, and you know, they're attached to characters, and I think that for a lot of people, Jon Stewart is Green Lantern because of the Justice League Unlimited cartoon and things like that. And so I don't, you know, have any problem with that. I mean, I can remember when I was watching the first season of Game of Thrones. I don't know if you guys watched that.
Of course.
But I got to the episode where Sean Bean, did you guys watch that?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I got to the scene where Sean Bean got killed, and I was really mad,
yeah.
You know? I mean, what the heck just happened? I've been following this character all season. I really like this guy, and he got killed. Like, it really angered me, you know? So I understand that, you know, and I don't take any offense to it, and it's totally fine. I think it's great that people are so invested in characters that they do care about them that much. You know, he just resonates with people, and he resonates with Van and I as well, and that's one of the reasons why we never had any plans to kill him, you know?
Okay. Three more questions, and then I'm out of your life. A lot of writers, a lot of artists like to stay up all night drinking coffee. And there's some that prefer the sweet, sweet taste of vodka. Which guy are you? Are you vodka or are you coffee?
Actually, I don't drink coffee at all. Caffeine just totally freaks me out. You know, like caffeine gives me the shakes almost. I don't drink coffee at all, nor am I a big vodka fan. I guess if we're going for morning drinks, I would say hot tea. And if we're going for, you know, evening drinks, it would be more like a Jack and ginger ale.
My friend, you and I should have a drink. I'm going to say that right now. Just for the fact that you picked Jack and ginger ale is a great mix. It always complements whiskey.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. There's a ginger ale that they sell, as far as stores go, only in the state of South Carolina. And so I get it whenever I pass through the state of South Carolina. You could probably buy it online, but it's called Blenheim. It's Blenheim. If you like Jack and ginger ale, you should order some of that because it's a really... And it sounds confusing, but it's a really spicy ginger ale. Like the ginger's really strong, you know? And when you put the Jack in there and you mix it, it's like a really, really good Jack and ginger ale. You should give it a shot.
Good. I might give that a shot the moment I look that up and start ordering myself some. Thank you.
All right. Wrapping up here, for me at least, I know you couldn't give away characters' names, so this might be a bit of a stretch. Can you please, please tell us the title of the first Green Lantern arc?
Absolutely not. I definitely cannot. Yeah. No, the title would be too revealing, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, then let me get back to my roots, which is Carol. As excited as I am for this scene of yours that in the first issue, which I can't thank you enough for, I have to ask if you're taking a stance on superhero deaths and saying we don't have any plans on killing John, does that set us up for, you know, failure, as in we can't expect high impact stories where, you know, Hal is on the brink of death and Carol's strung up by her neck or something viciously dangerous. You know, does making a stance or a tweet, a statement like that, take away from the suspense as a writer? Do you feel that you're locked in a corner now, that you can't raise the stakes too high anymore?
No, I don't. And I never said I was against, you know, death in comics or superhero death or anything like that. I just said that Van and I never had any plans to kill Jon Stewart. You know, I think that's a pretty specific, a pretty specific statement. So, no, I don't feel like I'm pigeonholed in any of those kinds of ways. You know, I do understand what you're saying, though, and I think in general, in terms of comic books, anyway, be it through just the nature of you're reading a Superman book and Superman's not going to die, and if Superman does die, he's going to come back. I mean, so to that extent, I think that's something that runs through a lot of your superhero-type comics, and that's part of the challenge. How do you build that drama, and how do you build up those conflicts and give them weight? And I think this first sort of long-form arc that I'll be doing on Green Lantern, it will carry through October, I think, is going to really accomplish a lot of what I'm talking about. So, you know, I guess stay tuned.
All right.
And as far as like the thing about Jon Stewart, the only reason why I really made that statement, and I thought a long time about it, it took me several days to say something on Twitter because, as you can probably tell from this interview, I never really talk about plot points very much. You know, I want the story to just be the story. But it was just such a big story, and like I say, I could see everybody getting upset about something, but I understood why they were getting upset. But in this instance, it wasn't warranted because before they even knew that it was a possibility, it had already been decided it wasn't going to happen. And I guess, I don't know, I almost felt bad that so many people were so bothered, you know, over something that in terms of Van and I and where we were already at with the Green Lantern books wasn't really true by the time everybody heard about it. So, again, and I'm not speaking to anything that happened before that because I'm not putting words in anybody else's mouth. You know, I'm not going to get caught up doing that. I can just speak for what, you know, Van and I and our conversations were. And I guess that's probably why I said something.
Fair enough. All right, Frank, you going to take over again?
All right, excellent questions from Brandon. We're going to move on to Colton. Colton, give him whatever you have.
All right. I know you've worked in comics for a while, but with your recent work in DC, I'm wondering, how does this compare to, say, working at Top Shelf? I mean, is one better or another, or is it just, like, two different types of things, like, you know, your little big company here versus your more moderate-sized company over here? What's it like?
It's different in a lot of ways. Just in terms of visibility, I guess, for one, you know, Top Shelf is a small press publisher, and they do mostly sort of black and white indie comics, those kinds of things, even though the stuff I did for them was more, you know, genre and it was full color, but, it's a much bigger apparatus, obviously, you know, in terms of Top Shelf is run by one editor for the whole company, which is Chris Staros, and DC has multiple editors and associate editors and things like that, and there's more of a process to things, whereas at Top Shelf, you wrote your story in the editorial, the editor would come back and give you comments on it with DC because it's a monthly book as opposed to an original graphic novel. You're turning in scripts before the whole story is done kind of thing. You're turning them in chunks as opposed to doing the entire thing and doing all your comments at once, if that makes sense. And so,
yeah.
And then monthly comics obviously is a completely different thing from graphic novels in terms of pacing and, having to reorient readers in each issue and those kinds of things.
What are you most excited about in coming to work on the Green Lantern books?
I guess the stories that I have in mind, I'm really excited about the stories we're going to tell, and I feel like they're risky stories, so I don't know that I would sit here and say to everybody, hey, I'm going to knock it out of the park or whatever, because it's certainly not the case. If you ever talk to a writer who acts like they know everything, then you're talking to the one writer who absolutely does not know everything. But I'm excited about the stories that we have, and they're risky, and they're challenging, and I'm looking forward to seeing if we can execute them the way I hope to.
Well, you're going to be writing Green Lantern and co-plotting Green Lantern Corps. Is there any pressure to follow such long-lived runs, or do you just feel confident in doing the story you want to tell?
Yeah, I mean, I just can't even think about stuff like that. I mean, if I try to compare myself to, Jeff Johns' run or any of those kinds of things, I mean, those are really long Hallmark runs, and I think a lot of people are sort of, when they heard I was going to be writing Green Lantern, like, it was time for me to spike the football or something, and it's like, no, I just caught the football 10 yards deep in my own end zone, and I got 11 guys trying to pick my head off running the other way at me. I got a long way to go before I can spike the football. So I just try not to look at it, comparing myself to other stuff. I'm just going to tell the stories I like to tell the way that I know how to tell them, and help the readers respond in a good way.
That's a great analogy, by the way. That was very impressive.
I appreciate it.
One thing I wanted to ask, Brandon's questionings inspired me. With Green Lantern, especially Green Lantern Corps, I've noticed there were a lot of characters that were introduced only to almost immediately die, and we barely get to learn anything about them. I'm wondering, for characters that may or may not die, would you just be creating characters that are just fodder for the death to add drama, or would you be willing to develop them before you kill them, kind of make us like them before they go, so we're upset and we feel emotion about the death?
That's a great question, and I will say that, let me answer this carefully. The early issues of Green Lantern will speak to that very topic. So let's just put it that way.
Oh, very interesting. Nice little taste there.
Yeah. I mean, literally, you're talking about something that I noticed myself when I read, and I knew it was something that I wanted to do, something that I wanted to explore in the stories.
Of course. It's not to any specific character, it's just theoretically sometime in the future, 20 years, etc.
In terms of what?
Just in terms of that if you were to introduce characters, it wouldn't just be for the sake of death, but we'd kind of build them up and understand them as characters. To me, that's kind of an important part of a character. It can't just be a character you throw under the bus just for the sake of throwing them under the bus.
Sure. I really can't answer the question any more specifically than I already have, because I think it'd give away what is probably one of my favorite moments that I've written so far. But I will tell you that it happens at the scene I'm talking about is the beginning of Green Lantern 23.
All right. I don't mean to press so hard. It's just, as interviewers, we gotta push a little hard so we can get something for the fans.
Oh, I hear you.
This is not, my last question is not really Green Lantern related, but with you taking over Demon Knights, a book I rather enjoy from Paul Cornella, what do you say differs your run from his? And any interesting tidbits you could tell us about it?
Wow, that's a good question. I never thought about that before. I definitely tried to maintain the voice and that sort of great blend of action and humor that he had in the series, you know. What am I doing differently? I think that I'm using the Horsewoman character a lot more, even though it was a character that he created. I've done some things with her in terms of, I don't know if expanding her skill set is the correct terminology, but giving her more of a focus and giving her powers more of a focus. Huh. And, sort of explaining, you know, more about why she's called Horsewoman. You know, she, in the second issue of my run, she gets a new horse because her previous one had been killed, and you end up finding out, you know, you would think that she's going to get some horse that looks like, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a famous horse, you know, Secretariat or whatever, you know, some sleek, you know, super fast horse or whatever, but she ends up picking this sort of chubby, you know, a little bit broken down, squatty horse who was pushing the mule wheel in town center, just like a workhorse as opposed to a battle horse or a speed horse. And the reason she picks this horse is because when she picks a horse, she doesn't pick one, you know, for skill so much as conversation, because she relates to horses more than she does to people. And so she ends up talking to this horse, who is the only horse, the only character in the series that calls her by her real name, which is Sarah. Everyone else calls her Horsewoman as if she's never even told them her real name, you know? So things like that, where I've expanded on her character, are some of the things I've really been enjoying about it.
That sounds really interesting. I can't wait to read. I think that's for me, Frankie, if you want to send it along.
All right, Colvin, those are immaculate questions. I'm going to move it now to Eric. Eric, give him some of that sweet nectar you call something.
Something. Yeah, I call it something. Hey, Robert, thanks for doing the interview. I appreciate it. And I do want to say I was one of those guys that was a pretty diehard Demon Knights fan, and I was very depressed about the whole turnover. So, you know, that horsewoman confrontation, the fact that you like Game of Thrones, makes me feel a little bit better about the situation, you know. But as someone speaking for Demon Knights fans, just, you know, hey, keep it amoral. I think that's what we like on that title, so that's all I can say. But
well, are you reading it now that I'm writing it, or no?
Yeah, no, I'm still on it. I was one of those, I was crushed. I was a little crushed. I mean, not that I get to your writing. I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, I think everybody likes Surrogates, and Exo Man of War is pretty cool, you know, so, but it was just, whatever. I mean, Demon Knights, you know, it was that title when it got launched. As soon as it was announced, people started petitions to please not cancel it before the first issue came out, you know, so it's got a pretty dark face, but yeah, I mean, we're pretty happy about what you're doing so far, from what I can tell. But I did want to ask about the Green Lantern stuff. Sort of back to Andrew's question at the beginning, he was asking about, you know, the idea of the stringing along of these big events. And for me, it's kind of more about what the character's about, sort of. I mean, you know, and nothing against people who really enjoy Geoff Johns' run, you know, but some of us kind of got a little irritated at the superhero-y aspects of it, and the idea that the Green Lanterns are kind of like, you know, they're supposed to sort of be cops in space, and they're sort of like a paramilitary unit. What kind of... is the direction going to change? I mean, for the book, is it more like because Exo Man of War is so cool, and I'm looking for something like that, sort of, you know, so is it more of a superhero book for you, or are you thinking of it more like a science fiction? Are they going to acknowledge that they're actually an organized group as opposed to just some dudes in costumes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely, you know, a lot of the conflicts that Hal's going to have to deal with early on, and this is stuff that I've talked about before in interviews, is he's going to be the new leader of the Corps, and, you know, to speak maybe very specifically to your question, you know, Hal's the kind of guy who's a test pilot, right? You know, he was a fighter pilot in the Air Force, now he's a test pilot, which is obviously a very, you know, sort of, you know, brave and difficult thing to do, and in its own way, very heroic. You know, if you go to the air show with your kids and they see the pilots flying over the beach, you know, they think they're heroes, but it's a solitary thing. So as risky as a guy as Hal is, and the chances that he takes, not just as a test pilot, but I think just as his character in general, the sort of, you know, brashness and riskiness that he has about him, that's great when he's a lone guy. But if he becomes leader of the Corps now, how does he reconcile that? Because now, if he does anything brash or risky, it's not just him that's on the line, it's everybody that's on the line. And he's not the kind of guy that necessarily wants that responsibility. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been a test pilot, he would have been a platoon sergeant, you know? So, yeah, there definitely will be the sense that he's part of a larger group as a Corps, and that's going to be one of the conflicts that he has to deal with. You know, how does he reconcile his sort of innate nature as being this go-it-alone guy with the fact that he now has to be the leader of a group that, in order for it to stay together, has to be a core. So I would say it's going to reflect on both of those things.
Sure, sure. I mean, and I guess one of the things that I think when Jeff toward one of the complaints about Jeff Johns' run that he seemed to sort of try to rectify when the I guess the New 52 was launched was Hal doesn't spend a lot of time on Earth in terms of, you know, hey, what does he do with his apartment? How does he pay for food? You know, and things like that, some kind of like real, you know, real world building questions. And I'm kind of interested, I mean, you know, I guess you can't say too much about exactly what's going on, but is there going to be more of a kind of, you know, are we going to see less of Hal on Earth? I mean, is he going to be, he's going to be dealing with these alien civilizations? Is he still going to have, you know, an apartment? Is he still going to pay rent? I mean, or are we talking about, yeah, he's pretty much got a new full-time job.
In the immediate near future of the series, yes, he's going to be off Earth much more because he's going to be leader of the Corps. He's going to be dealing with conflicts that are not Earth-based. But again, a little bit of this ties into the scene I was talking about earlier with him and Carol Ferris in the first issue of the run. So, but yeah, you know, the nature of the job is he's going to be off-world for the majority of the series, at least in the outset.
Sure, yeah. And I do want to say also, I had seen that you'd said you were, you know, you'd read like a couple hundred issues of Green Lantern kind of getting into it. And, you know, I guess, you know, some of the older stuff and some of the Jeff stuff. And I'm not a stickler for continuity in any way, shape, or form. But I'm kind of curious, I mean, how much of the older stuff is going to inform you? I mean, I think one of the good things about the New 52 is that it kind of, you know, opened up freedom. And, you know, as Andrew did say, he did appreciate the continuity kind of being held intact. I sort of had the opposite effect. I thought, you know, after so many years of so many kind of impactful storylines, there was a lot of like a lot less breathing room for the characters. I mean, and so I was kind of hopeful when they announced, you know, a bunch of new writers coming on. Not that I dislike the old writers, but because it's kind of like you guys are getting a brand new reboot. I mean, how much of the old stories are going to inform it? Do you have a kind of like timeline of things that did happen? You know, like, you know, Emerald, whatever, Twilight, whatever, Hal went crazy. Is there like a Bible for what happened, what didn't happen? How do you reference it? You know, I mean, are things going to kind of be clearer, or are you just going to kind of go from the assumption that everyone kind of knows what's up, Jeff's stuff happened, everything else is kind of up in the air?
I mean, I'm going to try to – I mean, it's obviously a very long, very sprawling continuity, and I'm going to try to be as accurate in everything as I can be, but I'm not going to swear that I'm going to have 100% success in that. But I – you know, in terms of a Bible or something like that, there isn't really anything like that. I did take a lot of notes while I was reading. And, you know, I actually, when I sit down to write any book, if it's something that's worked for hire, when I sit down, I take all of the issues and I put them on the table in front of me and I flip through them and I look up, you know, different things and different moments and I try to fact check everything as much as I can. So I do a lot of that. If there's a question that I have that I get stumped about, you know, there's guys at DC that can help me chase it down. Maintain those kinds of things. You know, I tend to be a stickler for not contradicting things, you know, so I do want to try to adhere to that, but, you know, and I guess to the extent that...
Yeah, I say throw continuity in the garbage if you can, so I'm on your side, but I see where you're coming from, yeah. Yeah.
I was saying,
yeah, I mean, you might as well toss out the baby with the bathwater on that, I think. You know, like you said, it's a couple of decades of really convoluted stuff. So, I mean, I'm not going to mind too much if some of the more questionable things kind of go out the window. But I did want to ask about, you know, the John Stewart thing. I mean, I guess because, you know, yeah, you don't plan the immediate. How interactive are the other Lanterns going to be? Are we going to have a kind of a finally a sense of autonomy between the titles? Is this like a TV where you guys are a TV show where you're, there's like a showrunner and you're all kind of in the room and you let each other know what's up? Or are you kind of just doing your own thing and your editors are keeping track that you guys don't step on each other's toes?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, the titles will stand on their own for arcs and then they'll come together for an arc and then go back on their own for arcs and then come together on an arc. I think that's probably what the overall plan is as far in terms of what DC is looking for the future from the books. You know, and I think, I mean, I'm guessing, you know, I've never been in a group situation like this before, but even a Valiant where, you know, if you want to have a character show up in your book, you got to make sure he's not appearing somewhere else, you know, to contradict that or whatever. And so, of course, editorial is always going to keep in mind those types of things. But I think even the sort of general feel of each of the four titles are going to be distinctive from each other in terms of the types of stories they tell and, you know, even though they're all sci-fi in the sense that, you know, they're all dealing with, you know, space and alien races and things like that, I think that in terms of concepts, you know, different genres within sci-fi, and I think that each of the titles is going to kind of represent its own unique sci-fi genre.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, is there going to be, I mean, are they going to be done in one stories? Or are you doing, I mean, are you kind of varying the size of the arcs and things like that?
My September issue is a done in one.
Holler.
Let me get that right. let me, that's right. September is a done in one.
That's great. That's great. I mean, you know, how do you guys do the pitch? I mean, now that you're kind of on, I mean, I guess Valiant is kind of a shared situation, and you've done a lot of stuff for yourself, and, I mean, and you've worked with Demon Knights, and I guess you were going to take over Constantine, but you didn't. Now that you're kind of under DC's umbrella, how does the pitch process work, you know, especially now with the kind of increased scrutiny with editorial, I guess, and not to open up, you know, closets or whatever, but, I mean, like, how does the pitch process work, especially for something like Green Lantern that was, you know, run by the guy who, you know, is the creative officer of the company? Is there an extra level of kind of, like, layering of the pitching, or are they letting you kind of run with your stories?
Yeah, I would say that the only additional thing that for the pitch process with Green Lantern was, you know, with other books that I've done, I type up my pitch document, which basically all my pitches look the same, where I start off with sort of a general sense of what I think the title and the series could be about, and then I talk about the characters, you know, this is Hal Jordan, this is the kind of character he is, and this is Carol, and this is the kind of character she is, and things like that. And then I talk about themes, you know, what I want the themes of the series to be. And then I go into specific storylines and arcs and things like that. And so that's sort of my general pitch. Now, I guess the only way really the Green Lantern was different, because I put the document together in the same way, was that whereas every other story I've ever pitched for, I just emailed it in. The Green Lantern asked me to fly to New York and deliver it verbally to all the execs. So, but, you know, my verbal pitch was, you know, identical to the printed pitch. And
right.
I guess it was just they wanted to hear me say it and, I guess, ask me questions and see if I had answers for them.
They didn't feel like reading. Like, oh, that's not.
What's that?
Like, yeah, I guess they didn't feel like reading it or whatever. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, no, they just, I think they wanted to be more of a thing where they could ask me questions and see what I had the responses to them, you know, or not, you know.
Was that before the summit?
Yes, that would have been like December, I think.
Jeez, December? You've been on this book since December.
Yeah,
well, December wasn't out. Yeah, that's a while, but December was only a couple months ago, Brandon.
The announcement was last month.
They're not, Brandon, they don't, you're not the first guy they tell about everything, sorry to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, we kept it quiet, you know, which I was happy about, you know.
Yeah, I do want to ask about the Four Lanterns. I mean, I guess because I assumed you were going to be sticking, you know, with just mostly Hal, but you are kind of, I guess, involved in Core, and, you know, we're traditionally used to seeing Guy and John in that book. Do you have like I don't want to say like a ranking system for the Lanterns and stuff, but, you know, each character has his favorites, so I don't want to put you out there. But, I mean, like, do you have a favorite? I mean, obviously you're kind of stuck, I don't want to say stuck with Hal, but, you know, you're kind of, you're figuring out the Hal character, and, you know, you should. You know, but how do you feel about the other Lanterns? I mean, like, is there a justification for really having four Earth Lanterns? I mean, are the books going to have a separate identity? I mean, I'm kind of worried about Kyle myself. That poor guy's been on the back burner for so many years, you know, but I'm kind of wondering where they fit into your plans for the character.
Yeah, well, I didn't get stuck with Hal. I mean, in the beginning when I got into the pitch process and they asked me if I wanted the right Green Lantern, you know, they just wanted a picture of me. You know, whoever the Green Lantern was going to be, they wanted a picture of me about whoever I thought the Green Lantern should be to lead the main Green Lantern title. And it made the most sense to me that it would be Hal, based on, you know, what I know is going to happen between now and the beginning of my run. So, you know, that's how that ended up. And in terms of the other Lanterns, you know, you said there were four. I guess there's five now if you're counting Baz. But, gosh, I know you asked me about Kyle. I'm trying to remember what the rest of your, you want me to rank them in terms of like how I like them, biggest to least?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to have to Yeah, I think I would assume you'd be reluctant to say that, but yeah, I mean, yeah, if you don't mind, I mean, like, you know,
I guess in terms of, let's do it this way, not in terms of whether or not they're good characters, but in terms of characters that I personally as a writer relate to,
sure,
which is very different. I mean, there's a lot of great characters in comics that I don't really relate to, and I don't think I would do a good job at them. I would say it's Hal, John, Cup, and then Baz, only because he's so new. That I guess those other guys, I feel like I know them so much better. You know, like, they've been around forever. You've known them since elementary school, and then some guy just got transferred in for 12th grade, you know, kind of thing. So
he's a blank slate. Just project onto him. You know, he's a blank slate. Like, oh, this guy's a new kid. He's my best friend.
Well,
Baz seems to be a little.
In terms of Kyle, he's got a really, really significant role to play up in the next few months.
Great, that's cool. I mean, I'm curious about Baz too, because I think Baz is at this point. People like Baz, you know, he's interesting. He seems a little conspicuously removed a bit from some of the titles. I mean, obviously he's still on the Jeff book, the Justice League of America book, but obviously he's not going to be headlining, the Green Lantern title and stuff. Is he going to be involved in the title, or is there kind of like plans within plans that can't be spoken of?
Yeah, I would say plans that can't be spoken of, but definitely plans. And like I say, I like him too. I feel bad I put him in last place there, but it's not for any reason other than what I said, that he's just kind of new and I don't really, you know as much about him as the other guys. But definitely plans for him, but plans that can't be discussed.
Well, just so we're clear, we're putting Kara above all of them, right?
Naturally.
Right, okay.
Naturally. As far as you know, yes.
I guess I did want to ask about, is this, you know, you're obviously writing EXO at the same time, and you're staying on EXO, right? That's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah. Yeah. And you're on Demon Knights, Green Lantern, EXO. Anything else you can, tell us months in advance to, give Brandon a little bit of excitement in his life? Any new projects coming up? Anything kind of on the background?
No, that's it for right now. That's pretty much it for right now. I've got something pretty big, creator-owned, I'm working on, but not ready to talk about that yet.
That's great, yeah. Yeah, that's. I mean, good.
So I was going to ask, Rags Morales mentioned online that he's doing, I believe, issue 24, and there's two parts to this question. Is Billy Tan's going to be on the book after that, and I heard this issue was all splash pages. Can you confirm that?
I can neither confirm nor deny such accusations.
Okay. Is Billy Tan going to be rejoining the book?
Far as I know, yes. Billy's going to be on the book for a very long time. Yeah.
Okay. Was there any consideration for any other artists? I know we've come attached to Doug Monkey. He's been here for
Doug Monkey.
For about 30,000 years now, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You'd have to ask the editors that. It's not like they ask me those kinds of questions, you know. They sort of make those decisions themselves. I can't really say. But in terms of, Rags being on the book, there's a very, very specific story-centric reason why that's the case. It's not like a schedule thing, like Billy couldn't keep up or whatever. It's got nothing to do with any of that. It's just something that I imagine will be announced pretty soon. It just hasn't been yet.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think I'm all set.
All right. I guess it has been complete. Hopefully... You enjoyed all the questions that was asked to you, Robert. Hopefully it wasn't too intrusive. Hopefully you enjoyed giving us all the small little tidbits that you were allowed to give us. So,
hey man, I gave you fair warning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't say we weren't prepared for that. Don't say we weren't prepared for that. But I'm glad. I'm very glad that we had you on the show. And hopefully we'll have you again, probably in the future, where pretty much your run has already been like at least halfway into it, and we'll be able to at least discuss that part of your run in its fullest detail.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometime after October, I think would be a good time for that if you guys are interested. Yeah.
All right. Good.
There'll be a lot of stuff to talk about by then.
hopefully everyone who's been listening has enjoyed the show with the Green Lantern Corps cast and Robert Venditti. And hopefully you'll be staying tuned for his run in Green Lantern in the future. And be well for all the surprises that we're going to get coming from his run, excluding Kara Ferris and hopefully Evil Star. But I'm not holding my breath for that. All right.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
I'm glad you're on the Green Lantern title itself, and I can't wait to start reading your run.
I appreciate that, man. Thanks a lot.
Have a good night.
You too, man. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Robert.